class is being dedicated in memory of Moshe Chai ben Harav Yeshaya. This is Uri's brother, one of Uri's brothers. May his neshama is in have an aliyah. Again, Moshe Chai ben Harav Yeshaya, his neshama should have an aliyah. So the part of the parasha which I wanted to focus on is the Parah Aduma. The Parah Aduma, that's what the parasha is named after. It's called Chukas. Chukas, and the word Chukas is from the word Chok, which literally means a statute. And it refers to the Parah Aduma. So just to clarify, many times we've discussed before, but the difference between a chok and a mishpat and a mitzvah, there are different definitions of mitzvahs. Mitzvahs have different definitions or different titles. Some mitzvahs are civil laws and social laws, they're mishpatim. Some mitzvahs are to remind us of different ideas. They inspire different perspectives, Shabbos, and to remind us about the creation of the world, and Pesach, Matzah, etc., all these different mitzvahs, they are testimonial mitzvahs. They're described as testimonial mitzvahs. And then you have a category of mitzvahs, which are called chukim. And chukim is a category of mitzvahs where the reason is not really understood. It's not understood. It's a chok, it's a statute. It's a statute without a reason. So you're not supposed to necessarily understand the rationale behind it. And there are so many mitzvahs like that. Basavacholah, milk and meat. Like, what's the rationale for not being able to eat milk and meat? What's the rationale for not mixing wool and linen inside your garments? That's a prohibition, one of the Torah prohibitions. You can't have wool and linen inside your garments. What's the rationale? What's the rationale why you can't plant wheat together in a vineyard? There are all these, you know, these laws like that. So there are maybe, I don't know how many there are all together, but there's a bunch of laws which are categorized as chukim, as laws without a reason, without a rational reason. Of course, the ultimate reason for all mitzvahs is because they're decrees from Hashem. They are enacted by Hashem. So really, even the mitzvahs, which have rational reasons to them, like not to murder, not to steal, Shabbos and Yom Tov, etc., they have rational reasons, but the proper perspective on those mitzvahs too is to understand that at the root level, all mitzvahs are because Hashem commanded them. All mitzvahs because Hashem commanded them. And we can never put the reason before the mitzvah. We can't say, "Well, this is the reason, and therefore I'm going to do it for that reason." Ideally, the proper perspective is to approach all mitzvahs with the attitude, "This is what Hashem commanded." Right? This is what Hashem commanded. I obey Hashem. He's my creator. He's my maker. He's my father in heaven. If your father told you to do something, if your father gave you a package and didn't tell you what was inside the package, and he told you, Simon, you're in New York next, please deliver it to this address. Are you going to say, well, Dad, you know, what's inside of it? Like, please tell me what's inside of it. And then when I know what's inside of it, then I'll decide whether I want to take it or not. You would never do that. It would be a total slap in the face, disrespectful to your father. Right? You do it because your father told you. And if you want to know reason, if you want to know the reason why, then he'll tell you the reason why. And obviously your father knows what's best, and you have a good relationship with your father. Your father is telling you to do something which is good for you, not bad for you. But that's the same thing with all the mitzvahs. The reason why we do them, because our father told us. Hashem told us. Your tati told you, take this box over here. See this box? Right? See the box? Black. It's got like these straps hanging out of it. Yeah. Right? These black straps. You see it? Take this. Put it on you. Wear it every day. Right? Wear it every day. What I'm referring to is tefillin. Right? Tefillin. Wear them every day. Trust me, it'll be good for you. It's true. It's really true. Hashem knows best. He made you. He made us. He knows what's good for you, neshama. So therefore, he told us, put on the tzitzis. Look, these over here. You trust your tati. You trust your father. He told you these are good. This is good. These tzitzis are good for you. Don't question. Don't worry about the consequences even. Right? Don't you do the right thing? Everything only good will come of it. Right? So, but that's the really overarching idea of mitzvahs in general. Right? Having said that, there are certain many mitzvahs where reasons are given as well, rationales. And we are supposed to probe and understand the rationale, appreciate the reason, or really more accurately, the flavor of the mitzvah. They say the flavor of the mitzvah is the better way to look at a reason for a mitzvah, because just like a good tasting food, the flavor is the motivation to eat it, but the real reason why you're eating it is because it's healthy for you. So the same thing with the rationale for mitzvahs. The proper word to use for the rationale for mitzvahs is flavor. The reason why we do it is because Hashem told us to do it. there's a nice flavor to it as well. This is the rationale. There's a reason, there's a rationale. That's the flavor that makes the mitzvah tasty. So whatever the mitzvah is, there are many, many tasty reasons, spiritually, intellectually, tasty reasons for the mitzvahs, which we can learn about and we're supposed to learn about. But ultimately, the root of it all is because Zoy state, that's what Hashem says, that's what Hashem decreed. And chukim, the category of mitzvahs, which are exclusively called chukim, laws which don't have even rational reasons, and the only way to relate to it is only because Hashem commanded us to do it. The purpose of those mitzvahs is to instruct and to radiate out upon all the mitzvahs which do have rational reasons, to make us realize that even the ones which have rational reasons are ultimately because they are decrees from Hashem. And that's what the whole category of chukim referred to. Chukim, laws without reasons, that to instruct us about all the commandments, even the ones which are rational, even the ones which make sense, that they're also ultimately in order to do them because Hashem commanded us to do them, right? That's what chukim are in general. However, there's one mitzvah, there is one chok, there is one statute of all statutes. It's the statute of all statutes. It's called the quintessential statute. And that's what this parasha is about. That's what the parasha begins. The quintessential chok, the quintessential law without a reason, is called this paraduma, the red heifer. What is the red heifer? The red heifer is this. It's a red heifer. Right? It's a red heifer. It's a red cow. A red cow in the times of the Beis Hamikdash. In order, if a person became ritually impure by contact with a corpse, right, with a corpse. So then if a person, they contract a tumor, a ritual impurity, and the only way to get rid of that ritual impurity is by being sprinkled with the ashes of the red heifer, which are mixed with water, right? Sounds like a very mysterious law, and it is mysterious. It's a chok. It's a chok. It's a very mysterious, out there type of idea. You take this cow. And there are laws about this, many, many laws about this. There's a whole tractate in the Mishnah, the Gemara, about the red heifer. Hmm. The red heifer has to be completely red, not a single black hair or white hair on its body. Every single hair has to be red. It has to be, it could never have carried anything on its back, ever, since it was born. And the Gemara, it's a fascinating, I'm not going to go into it, it's a fascinating discussion as to how they raise these cows. And these cows had to be pure from the very beginning, not coming into contact with any impurity themselves. It's an astounding description of what they would do in order to establish these cows, in order to be able to administer these ashes, the red heifer ashes, upon someone who's impure. But this is what the parasha begins talking about, right? This special procedure, if a person was in contact with a corpse, they would be sprinkled on the third, they would come to the Beis Hamikdash, and the Kohen actually was done on the outside the Beis Hamikdash, and a special Kohen who's designated for this would sprinkle the ashes onto the person on the third and seventh day of his purity. But the parasha goes through it describing all of this, describing the special law of the purification process, right? And it's a chok. It sounds very strange. How do we understand it? What's the mechanism? What do these details even mean? Like it says, upon which a yoke has not come on its back ever since the beginning of its life. Every single hair has to be red on his body. Yeah, it's a chok. But that's not the reason why it's called the quintessential chok. Because after all, every chok, like milk and meat, have all these strange laws about them. What makes the chok of the paraduma, the quintessential chok, as it's described, as the parasha describes it, zos chukas etc., this is the ultimate chok of the Torah. This is the chok of the Torah. What's the reason for that? What makes it the quintessential chok? So it's a very famous, well-worked idea, but important to always review and appreciate. And I'm going to share a new insight onto it, another layer of understanding to it, which I hadn't heard before. But the quintessential chok of the paraduma is the paradoxical nature of it. Not just that it has strange laws, but it's paradoxical as well. Why is it paradoxical? Because if you look on page 841 in the description of the procedure of how it affects purity, starting from verse 11, it says, whoever touches the corpse of any human being shall be contaminated for 7 days. He shall purify himself with it on the third day, and on the seventh day become pure. And it goes on describing the purification process. right? Whoever touches the dead body of him will have died, will not have done that. The impurity will be upon him. But it goes on, that describes the actual, but it's purification. However, turn back a page, go to page 839, and read verse 7. It says, the Kohen shall immerse his clothing. He's the one who's doing the administering of the actual ashes, pouring the ash, sprinkling the ashes onto the person. The Kohen shall immerse his clothing and immerse himself in water, and afterwards he may enter the camp. And the Kohen shall remain contaminated until evening. The Kohen who is administering the actual ashes and doing this procedure of purifying you, he becomes impure. So the very same, detergent which cleanses you makes the person using that detergent dirty.
Mm.
Right? That's really what it's, essentially what it is. The detergent which cleanses you, makes you sparkling clean, makes the person using that detergent sparkling dirty or filthy dirty, makes him impure himself. Right? The Gemara even goes on and says, the Gemara has a further debate on. Rabbi Akiva and the Gemara says that this is the meaning of the verse that in Kohelis and Ecclesiastes about that Shlomo Melech said, the Pasuk says about King Solomon, it says, Omer Shlomo, al kol eila madati. I'm sorry. All of this, I researched everything with my chokhmah to find the chokhmah of everything King Solomon said, Amarti, and I even said a chakamah, I wanted to become wise, but it was too far from me, it was so distant from me. So the Gemara says that's referring to the paraduma. Shlomo Melech, the wisest of all men, couldn't understand how it could be so. What was this paradox? Amar Shlomo, Shlomo said, al kol eila madati, I understood the reasons and the rationale for all of the mitzvahs. The parasha zeh shel paraduma, this parasha paraduma, I investigated it, I asked the questions about it. I said, I want to figure it out, but I couldn't figure it out. And Rabbi Akiva says, another further reason for the mystery of it is this paradox, that not only the one who's sprinkling, administering it, but if you would take those ashes, those ashes in the water, and sprinkle it onto someone who is pure, he would become impure. So it's all part of the paradox, right? The one who's using those ashes becomes impure. If he sprinkles on somebody who's pure, right? If you're impure, I sprinkle it on you, you become pure. You're pure, I throw it on you. The same ashes, you become impure. Like, what's going on over here? It's so paradoxical. So that's what makes it into the, that's what makes the paraduma into the quintessential chok. Right? So the medrash, there's a medrash on this, and the medrash says that, so the opening medrash on the parasha, I'll read it. It says, which really is an expansion in this idea. So zos chukas, zeshom akosiv. This is also, now we know that the medrash always attaches another verse in Tanakh to the verse which is being discussed. So the verse which the medrash attaches to this is the pasuk in Iyov and Job, which says, mi yitain tohu metome. Who is able to produce purity from impurity? Lo echad, is it not the one and only one? Right, producing impurity from impurity. Who is the one who's able to create purity out of impurity? And the Medrash goes on to give different examples. For example, Avram Avinu, the holy, pure Avram Avinu, came from who? Terach. Terach was an idol worshipper, so that's purity from impurity. Chizkiah me'achaz, the great righteous king Chizkiah, came from a wicked king Achaz. Yoshiyahu me'amon, Yoshiyahu from Amon. Also, a righteous king from an unrighteous king. Mordechai from Shimei, Mordechai in the story of Purim. He came from Shimei, he wasn't a righteous person. Yisrael Mu'umos, the Jewish people, emerged out of the nations of the world, referring to Mitzrayim. Mm-hmm. The birth of the Jewish people, the birth of the holiness of the Jewish people, was born in the cesspit of Mitzrayim, of Egypt. That's again, purity emanating from impurity. Ha'olam haba, this is an interesting one. Ha'olam haba ma'olam hazeh. The world to come emanates out of this world. Now this world, as much as, a lot of people enjoy this world, and it is enjoyable, but at the same time, this world pales in comparison beyond anyone's imagination to the pleasure and the light and the beauty and the splendor of the world to come. That's axiomatic. We have to remember this. This should be something which be etched into our minds every single day. This world is merely a prusdor. This is just purely a little kind of anteroom, a corridor for the palace and the Gan Eden of the world to come. That is the bedrock for this philosophy, hashkofa, that a human being, not just a human being should have to understand this world is only a preparation for the world to come. We're in the preparation room, in the anteroom before the banquet hall of the world to come. The world to come is, and you can't even imagine it. It's like it's beyond all of the delights and pleasures of this world. In which case, this world is so like shallow, so dark and so meaningless in comparison to the light and the beauty of the world to come. Yet the world to come comes from this world, because if you don't go through this world, you don't get to the world to come. Mm. This is the avenue. This is the doorway. And it's what we do in this world which gives us our world to come. Right? These are the axiomatic principles of Judaism, of life, that what we do in this impure world is what creates the eternity, the kedusha, the holiness of the world to come. Right? What we do in this with the mundane, impure things. So that's where the Medrash says, Olam Haba emanates from Olam Hazeh. The world to come comes out of this world. Again, purity from impurity. Another example, Beheres Kegris Ba'adam. This is referring to leprosy, the laws of leprosy. So laws of leprosy in the times of the Chumash, in the Gemara, leprosy was like a skin condition. So if a person had a skin condition on part of their body, they become impure again. But paradoxically, if that leprosy spread across the entire body of the person, pure, head to toe, he becomes pure. Mm-hmm. He becomes pure. Paradox. Another paradox. Mm-hmm. Who does this? It's only Hashem. Mi osakeid, mi tzivake. Who commanded this? Must be the one and only one. Only Hashem can do this. Another example. Heisha shemeis v'lada me'me'el. Another example is a woman who God forbid, she miscarries. So that she miscarries. The fetus now is a deceased part of her body. Now, if it says a midwife puts her hand and she's trying to do something, she puts her hand inside, the midwife becomes impure by contact with the deceased fetus inside. Yet the mother is pure. Again, the mother is pure. Says and Medrash says, Hameis bebayis, habayis tahom, because this deceased fetus, while it's inside the mother, it's pure. It makes her pure. But once it comes out, it makes her impure. So all of these paradoxes, these are all the different examples. Again, who did this? It's Hashem. And then finally, ha'oskim b'para metachila, those who are busy involved in the paraduma, metachila v'atsof, from the beginning till the end, they become dirty, or not dirty, but impure, because of the contact with the ashes of the paraduma, the begodim, the clothing, higufa metaris begodim, but yet at the same time, it purifies a person. Amra kadosh baruch hu, chuka chakakate, yes, this is the chok which I enacted. This is the gezer, the decree which I enacted. Yatir Rishai La'avor al gezerosa. You shouldn't violate my laws. Right? That's the Medrash ends. There's another example. It doesn't say over. It's not in the Medrash, but this I was like really I astounded by this. You know, this in a sudden this kind of now bookends the two portions together, because we got chuk, the paraduma law at the beginning of this portion. What's the very very last topic of the second? We're in a double portion this week. The very last topic of the second portion, Balak, is about the sacrifices the Balak brought in order to stimulate Bilam to curse the Jewish people. That's the last point. That's the last topic of the parasha. Well, not almost the last topic of the second parasha. So unbelievable. The Medrash says, and the Gemara says, that the Gemara says that Bescha Membe's Karbonus, in the merit of the 42 sacrifices that Balak brought, that Balak, the Rasha, Balak, the wicked one, brought as sacrifices, Zocha, he merited, the Yotza, Memenu Rus, he merited that Rus became his descendant, Ruth. Ruth from Moab, because Balak is from Moab. So Ruth the Moabite was his descendant. He merited because, now even though he brought these sacrifices, he didn't bring these sacrifices in a holy way, the Gemara talks about the idea of lo lishma bo lishma, the idea of doing things unaltruistically. When you do things unaltruistically, you'll eventually come to do things more altruistically. So one of the examples the Gemara gives is Balak bringing these sacrifices. He brought, they were, you know, after all, sacrifice to Hashem, but that, you know, merit or that quality of bringing sacrifice to Hashem eventually manifested itself in him having Ruth as his descendant. Well, think about this for a second. Who came from Ruth? The Messiah. The Messiah, David and Melech, came from Ruth. So what an incredible example of purity emanating from impurity. Balak. right? I mean, it's a very interesting. There's another answers another question. There, I think we have Parshas Noach named after Noach, the person. We have Yisro named after Yisro, Moshe's father-in-law. Both of those are righteous people, so it's not a hard, not difficult to understand that the entire portion should be named after those two people. Then what's the next portion named after somebody? Korach. So everyone wonders, you know, Korach, righteous. Yeah, we said this last week. Tzaddik Ketama Yifroch, because that the verse says a tzaddik flourishes like a date palm, alluding to the righteousness of Korach, really latent inside of his drifting away was righteousness. In the future he's going to become a Kohen in the future. Anyway, so Korach is explained as well. Next portion named after someone. Well, next week's portion is Pinchas. So he's also a righteous person. But Balak, there's no redeeming factor about Balak. He's a Russia, a terrible Russia. So how did he get to have a whole portion named after him? Teretz is, the answer is because he's another example of how incredible things can emanate and emerge from impure places. Again, yeah, we've got to always emphasize, this is not an invitation or a prescription, go ahead and do impure things, because eventually pure things are going to come out of it. That's up to God, right? We're still going to be held accountable for doing those impure things. But the reality is that pure, the Tahor, as the Pasuk said, Mi yitein Tahor mitah, who is able to produce purity mitomei from something of impure? That's only Hashem. That's actually the Pasuk says it. Who is the one who's entitled? Who is the one who is allowed to create purity out of impurity? Lo echad, only Hashem. We can't do that ourselves. If it happens, it happens. But you know, and then it's Hashem's divine providence which allows the purity to come out of it. But that's another example of Balak creating, bringing about David HaMelech in the future. But there's a question though. There's a question which is raised by the commentary called the Be'er Yosef. Be'er Yosef, his name was Rabbi Yosef of Salant. And I don't know exactly the year he lived, but he lived in the 1800s. So Yosef Tzvi of Salant, Be'er Yosef. So he has he wonders, he says, when you look at this Medrash, at the end of it, when the Medrash mentions the example also of the Paraduma as being an example of this purity emanating from impurity. So the Medrash says the following, therefore Hashem said, I enacted a chok, gezeira gezarti, and a decree I decreed. So what's the extra expression, a decree I decreed? Just a quick reminder to turn your phones off, right? so chok chakakati, I enacted a statue, that's the word in the parsha. But what's the additional phrase of gezeira gezarti, a decree I decreed? Now a decree is, the word decree is more familiar with decrees, like a negative decree, God forbid, a gezeira of some kind of gezeira of negativity or a gezeira of positivity as well. The truth is, it can be both. It can be both. Give me a second, I'm going to turn this off. In the socket there. Right? In other words, a gezeira, you know, typically means it's being decreed from on high.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Things are decreed from on high. Decisions are made from on high, why things happen. But decisions, decrees are made upon high. So what does that mean over here? So he says very, very, and this is the real take-home message from this, is what's the purpose? Like, what is the purpose of this paradox of the Paraduma, of the Red Heifer? What's the purpose of it? And he says the purpose of it, it's the lesson of life. It's mamish, the lesson for life. It's the lesson for life that we don't understand life. We can't understand the real, I said before, the one of the messages of the Paraduma and the one of the messages of Chukim in general is to reflect upon all the commandments that do them because Hashem decreed them to do them. But he says it also applies to our life's experiences, what happens in our lives, what goes on in the world. And we're trying to figure it out. We're trying to fathom it. And everything is paradoxical. Everything is backwards. Why is this pure person becoming impure? Right? Why is this righteous person suffering? That's the ultimate question. Tzaddik, the ultimate question that every person grapples with and is psychologically, emotionally, intellectually grappling with is tzaddik v'rela, the righteous person who suffers, the wicked person who prospers. Right? The classic question of all times. And you know, the books have been written on this, and it's those on secular books, shouldn't go to those secular books on this subject. But the answer is because we don't understand, we can't fathom Hashem's ways. We can't fathom Hashem's ways. And the purpose of the Paraduma is to hit home that idea. In the days of the Beis HaMikdash, the Paraduma was a very, very frequently practiced procedure. It was done on a frequent basis, he says, because people have been pure and they had the ability, the opportunity to be able to purify themselves. We don't have the Paraduma today. So it was done on a regular basis. So, you know, he writes, he says that the more you do something, the more it makes an impression upon you. Right, that the expression of there's it says the following. It says Hakola fi rova masa. Everything goes according to the abundance of action. Everything follows an abundance and a multiplicity of actions. The more you do something, the more it makes an impression. Mm. Right. This is in general a very, very good message for mitzvahs in general. Now that Kodesh Baruch increased the number of mitzvahs for us to give us more merit because we've got more activities, more things to keep us busy with because those mitzvahs have an impression upon us. Everything is according to the abundance and the increase of deeds. Ribu amasim, increase of deeds have a greater impression. He says the same thing with the Paraduma. They did it all the time. Every day you'd see it. Every time you'd see it, every time you'd experience it, you'd see this paradox staring you in the face. The paradox of the paradigm would be staring you in the face. You start thinking, isn't life paradoxical also? That's what life is like. That's what happens in life. Life is paradoxical. Like, I don't understand. Like, I put all this effort into this project, this effort, and that just, and then something happened where it just like fell on its face. This disaster struck. We don't have to enumerate them. All the paradoxes of life, which we can't understand, the message of the paraduma is that we don't understand. That's the message of the Paraduma. And that's why it's called the quintessential. I'm going to read it from the Art Scroll Medrash where he summarizes it. He says the following. He says that the red cow with its mystifying laws fills a special role in the Torah's program for edifying its adherents. Unlike other mitzvahs, the law of the red cow cannot be embraced by one's understanding or sympathetic heart. It's got to be accepted with faith, with unquestioning reliance on God's superior wisdom and abiding solicitude for our best interests. By evoking this kind of wholehearted trust in God, the mitzvah of the red heifer trains us to accept God's judgment and bend to his will, even when they are completely inexplicable to us. Not only in matters of practical matters, observance, but also with respect to the vicissitudes of human life. With the lesson of the red cow to guide us, we'll be prepared to weather the frequently confounding expressions of divine providence that inflict poverty, suffering, death, and bereavement on the people who seem to least deserve them. Our faith will not be rattled by the eternally perplexing question of why bad things happen to good people, even while the good things seem to favor the bad people, because we have already internalized the idea that God's strategic calculations, which assign a place for every person, every deed, and every event across continents and generations into his grand plan for bringing the world to its goal, are far beyond our comprehension. So far that his motives and methods cannot be anything but an inscrutable mystery to us terrestrial beings. And that's what he says. That's the double expression of a chok. I created a chok, and gezeira gezarte. A gezeira is the decree. They go hand in hand. The purpose of this chok is to teach us that there are gezeiras, as uncomfortable as they may be, and we don't understand. However, the Medrash says, there's an interesting Medrash regarding the Paraduma. Connected with this, the Medrash says, further down, it says, take the Paraduma. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hashem said to Moshe, L'chani Megala Tampar. I'm going to explain to you the reason why, but others are not explaining it. However, Pasuk says, in Zechariah, V'ahoye Bayam Ohu, Lo yiyah or yikaros v'kipayon. The day will come when light will not be obscured. Light will not be scarce. Devar mechusam. The day will come when things which are hidden from you in this world, asidim liyos tzofen l'olam haba, will be visible in the world to come. This is the promise, and this is being said with regard to the Paraduma. The Paraduma is going to be revealed in the world again. What does that mean? It's going to be revealed. So we'll live with this understanding, because the Paraduma represents the paradox and the inexplicable nature of life and existence and what goes on in life in the world. And that's inexplicable. But the day will come. The day will come when we'll understand how everything fitted into a big divine plan. This is the constant idea, again, which is so essential to hammer into our minds, into our hearts, the idea that whatever is going on, we don't understand. And if we're going to try and figure it out, we're fighting a losing battle. We're fighting a losing battle. It's not for us to figure it out. There's a higher power which is controlling everything, and that's the obligation we have. It says it even says that the way that the unculus is the Aramaic translation of the Chumash. So on the verse over here, it says Zochukas Torah. See, he translates it as, if you look at the unculus, Da Gezeris Araisa. This is the decree. This is the decree of the Torah. The Pocket Hashem. It's not a statute, a law, but it's the decree. It symbolizes the decree. There used to be a tradition, very interesting. I don't know if you've heard of this, but here we are on Friday of Parashas Chukas. Tomorrow's Chukas. So the Magen Avraham, one of the codifiers of Halacha, cites a practice of individuals to fast on the Friday prior to the reading of Parashas Chukas. Some would have a custom of fasting today. In general, it's also a very big anomaly to have a fast on a Friday. We never have a fast on a Friday, with one exception. But what's the reason why? You know, and also especially because fast days are enacted based upon a particular event which took place on that date. So even when there is a fast, there is a Sarbat Teves, the 10th of Teves. If that falls out on a Friday, then we do fast. That's the one exception. We do fast on a Friday. But fast days move around the week, right? This coming Thursday is a fast day, right? It's the 7th of Tammuz this coming Thursday. So other years is on a Tuesday, other years is on a Sunday. It varies. But there was a fast day always on a Friday, on the Friday of Chukas. And it is, so what date? What happened? So there's some say because it was to commemorate the burning of 20 wagon loads of the Talmud and other rabbinic books in France in the 1500s. 1200s. Yeah. When the event happened on the 9th of Tammuz. Now, the 9th of Tammuz doesn't always fall out on a Friday, on the Friday of Parshas Chukas. So why did they make it? Why did they make the fast day today and not on the 9th of Tammuz? And the answer is, he says, the Magen Avraham explains the reason why, based upon the Aramaic translation of what we've been discussing, Zos Chukas HaTorah, this is the law of the Torah, this is the Gezerah, this is the Torah's decree. It was understood to be a Torah decree that such a tragic event would occur on the Friday before this Torah reading. The Imre Shammai supplies additional historical, other reasons as well, but the idea is that this it's a heavenly punishment. It was a heavenly punishment, right? But this goes together. But why do they fast on this day? Because to remind us that we don't understand, there are things which can happen in the world which we don't understand. And that's why this day was, you know, it had its association with that particular event, but it's also connected to this message of the Paradum as well. But this is the, you know, this is the message. I was thinking about this today, you know, about this idea. It's interesting, you know, when was the law of the red heifer first given to the Jewish people? So most people would say at Sinai, Mount Sinai, right? That's when the mitzvahs were given. But we know there are certain mitzvahs which were given before the Jewish people came to Sinai. There were certain mitzvahs which were given to the Jewish people before they even arrived at Sinai. Now, they may not have received their full-blown power and effect of obligation till Sinai, but certain mitzvahs were introduced to the Jewish people before they even came to Sinai. So one of them was the red heifer. When were they told about the red heifer? So the Pasuk says they were told about the red heifer back in, right when they came out of Mitzrayim, when they'd crossed over the sea. As mentioned in Parshas Beshalach, when they came across the sea and they were on the way to Sinai, so the Pasuk says that there was no water, they complained, and then they called out to Hashem. And then Hashem, the place that this happened was a place called Marah. And they called out, V'yitzak al Hashem, he called out to Hashem, so Moshe called out to Hashem on behalf of the Jewish people, for Yoreu Hashem ate, and Hashem showed him a stick, a piece of wood, V'yashlech al Amoyim, and he threw it into a pool of water which was over there. And this water was not sweet water. It was very bitter water. V'yimtaku amayim, and the water became sweet. Shom som lo chok mishpat shom niso. That's where chok and mishpat were given to them. Chok and mishpat was given to them for shom. And that's where they challenged Hashem. They tested, and that's where Hashem tested the Jewish people. Sorry. So it says that he gave them there chok u'mishpat. Chok, wow. Chok. Says the Medrash, Chok, Rashi quotes the Medrash, it's Gemara, B'mara, in this place called Mara, Nosalam Miktas Parshas, Hashem gave to them a few passages of the Torah, namely, Shabbos, Paraduma, and laws of civil law, Dinim, civil law. So Mishpat is civil law, right? That's the word for civil law. And Chok is Paraduma, is the Paraduma. That's where he gave it. So why here? And why together with Mishpat? And also, the Pasuk doesn't say explicitly about Shabbos, but the Medrash Gemara says also Shabbos. So three things were given: Shabbos, Paraduma, and civil law. Why these three things? So first of all, the Ramban, right? The Ramban says over here that really connects so beautifully to the idea of the Chok, because the Pasuk said, because the Pasuk then says that's right. So the Pasuk says that Hashem showed him a stick, But however, he writes, he says that based upon a medrash, that it doesn't. You can actually read the word not as showed him, but taught him. But Hashem taught him, right? Because that piece of wood, the medrash says, was bitter itself. So the piece of wood was bitter. The water was bitter. And then he threw it into the water and it became sweet. And if you read the word, not as he showed him, but he says he instructed him, because the word yurei can also mean to instruct as well. Doesn't say he showed. If you look at the violations are very, very important, because how you vowel words changes the meaning of words. So the verse doesn't say yarehu, which would mean he showed him. Ella v'yarehu. Same letters, just different violation. Wrote Yorehu, which means he instructed him. Horahu, he instructed him. Darko, Hashem instructed Moshe the way of Hashem, his ways. That is to say, Shehorahu v'limdo, he taught him and showed him Darko, his ways, the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shumamtik hamar b'mar, that he's able to make something bitter sweet. He can that which is bitter can turn something into sweetness. The same lesson as the paraduma. Sweetness can come out of bitterness. Sweetness can get, paradoxically, sweetness can come out of bitterness. But Hashem does that. That's his ways. Hashem's ways are, right, they're beyond us, unfathomable. But when things happen, and really it's a big nechama to us and a consolation, when things are troubling, when things are difficult, try to remember, hold on to this. Who can produce purity out of impurity? Hashem, right? There's purity which is going to come. Olam Haba is going to come. The world to come is going to come. Here in this story over here, the sweetness comes from the water, which is bitter. The same idea. This is what the chok of the paraduma teaches us, that purity, goodness, and greatness and light can emanate from darkness. Light can come from darkness. Now, just to add on my own thoughts on this, the other two mitzvahs which were given were Shabbos and Dinim and civil law. So I was thinking about this morning. You could take it or leave it. This was my thoughts about this. Is that if we think about all, when we think about an upstanding life is is life of ethics and morality, which is really what civil law is all about. Mishpat facilitates an upstanding life of morality and ethics and proper conduct in society. It's a mishpatim are the laws which everyone gravitates towards, not to murder, not to steal, and to be fair in judgment, is it fair in business, etc. That's mishpat. That's one aspect of life. The other aspect of life is spirituality, is bringing God into your life. So what's the ultimate, what's the mitzvah which we have every single day, which literally transforms and elevates the entire week, making the whole week a Hashem focused week? Shabbos. Shabbos is the origin. Shabbos is the reservoir. It's the generator of spirituality for the entire week. A life without Shabbos is a life without Hashem, right? Shabbos is the day which is all about bringing Hashem in Kedusha and sanctity into one's life. That's what Shabbos is about. Mm-hmm. So these are the two ends. But the challenge of life is always, you know, dealing with all of the vicissitudes, the challenges. So the other ingredient in life is remember that Hashem is running the world. And Hashem is running the world and we can't understand everything. And that's what the Paraduma teaches us. So, you know, I was thinking maybe as they were preparing for Sinai, approaching Mount Sinai, they were given three mitzvahs which really encompass life. They encompass life. They encompass our regular mundane life, civil law, getting ready for making sure our regular life is civil and upright and righteous and ethical, etc. A mitzvah which symbolizes that life is all about kedusha, life is all about holiness, life is all about elevating ourselves, coming close to Hashem, which is Shabbos. And the message is, you won't understand everything. We're trying to live this, you know, moral life, an ethical life, a moral life, and we're doing well. And we're trying to live a spiritual life and a Shabbistic life, and we're doing well, and we're following these laws, but then things go awry and things fly at us from left field. And we don't understand, so that we have to be reminded of the message of the Paraduma, the red heifer, that it's a chok. Just like that's a chok, life is a gezeira as well. We don't understand Hashem's ways, and we have to just trust that Hashem knows best. Hashem knows what's good for us. Hashem knows what's happening in the world, and everything is being driven towards an ultimate purpose and light at the end of days when everything will be revealed to us, just like the Paraduma will be revealed to us as well at the end of days.